Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing. 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. This is your co-host, Rob DiPietro. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be bringing my co-hosts, Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman, very shortly. In this episode, we get into a great discussion about Stuff Plus. Jeff Zimmerman recently wrote an article about it on Fangraphs, and we're just trying to dive in into what the pitch modeling is trying to tell us about a pitcher, their pitches, their arsenals, their effectiveness, and how we can use Stuff Plus in our fantasy baseball evaluations, if we would be using it, the effectiveness of it, just, you know, as with everything that comes out and anything that could possibly give us one step closer to being better fantasy baseball players. We're trying to decipher the information, what it's trying to do for us, and how it can help us, or if it's helping us. So we get into a discussion about that. We talk about ball percentage, which is a great tool to have in your toolbox while evaluating pitchers. Jeff Zimmerman, again, wrote an article about it on Fangraphs, basically just refreshing some of the research that Baseball HQ has done on it in the Baseball Forecaster. And very, very awesome tool to have while you're looking at pitchers. It's very useful. So we talk about that. We talk about our player evaluation right now. How much are we looking at in-season production versus the projection from the preseason and the rest of the season? And we get into the waiver process, how we go about our fabbing on the weekend. When did it start? When did it end? And everything in between. And yeah, we have a wonderful discussion all around about fantasy baseball. I'd like to thank everyone who's taken the 20 to 90 seconds it takes to fill out a rating or review for the show. It goes a long way for the podcast and the show, and me, Rob, and Jeff greatly appreciate that. And anyone who's come and checked out the Pull Hitter Patreon to get the other two podcasts that the Launch Angle produces per month, really appreciate that. I hope everyone is having fun over there. And if you still haven't tried it out, for $5 a month, you can come on over. You get the two additional Launch Angle podcasts, plus about 5 to 7 podcasts per week additional that I do. Daily podcasts, recapping box scores, player trends, all that fun stuff. And as well as my lineup pods I do for the NFBC scoring period that can really help you in your daily leagues as well. So appreciate the opportunity for letting me talk about that. And we'll get right into the episode now. And enjoy.
Here's the pitch.
Alrighty, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm Rob DiPietro, your co-host. I'm here with Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman. We're going to get into a bunch of awesome discussions. Got a lengthy playlist here of things to talk about. But first, Jeff, Rob, how you guys doing on this wonderful Thursday?
I'm doing fine. I've actually still got a kid in the house. My daughter has somehow had both of her college classes as her first and second hour during the day. So she's done, like in her high school, like she's already classed out. So I was like, oh, was this not planned? And it was like this big smile across her face. So she doesn't have to get to school till like 10 o'clock for like the last 2 weeks of school.
Awesome. Good days.
It's good. It's good to be back with you guys. A few people asked, like, where were we last week? The honest truth is, Rob started recording the Modica podcast Friday evening and hadn't finished by the following Thursday, so he was unavailable because he was still going through every starting pitcher who has ever pitched for every team. I thought it was an interesting decision to go historically through every starting pitcher who has ever thrown a start in Major League Baseball. It started dragging, like when you got to the 1970s Pirates staff, but it's interesting stuff still. It was remarkable that you were able to go 6 full days with that podcast.
Yeah, we cut it off after Rick Roden and Doug Drabeck. That's like as far as back as I can go. So
If you're not committed enough to your team to go back to analyze, like the, knowing what Doug Drabeck threw and what his stuff plus numbers were, that can help your process now. So, like, if you're not fucking willing to listen to that, that's on you, not on me. And that's why I'm going to win the money and not you guys. No, I think the podcast you're doing with Maddie every week is awesome. It's a big fucking commitment listening to it. Like,
it is.
I download it first thing Saturday mornings. And I'm usually at my cottage now, and the weather's nice. So I go for hour long walks, and I go for a full Saturday hour long walk, and I'm like through the Cincinnati Reds. And then I go for a second hour long walk. And these are like 6 kilometer walks. So these are big, serious up and down hills. I'll go for a second one. Like, it killed me 2 weeks ago. You're like 2 hours into the podcast with Matt. You're at the Los Angeles Dodgers. So you're barely halfway through the team. And you start a fucking 15-minute conversation about stuffed peppers. And I love when you guys start talking about the Italian food. But it's like, guys, I've been listening for 2 fucking hours. And there are still like 12 teams to go. And I've been walking nonstop for 2 hours at this point. Anyways, you guys are killing it. I love the way you guys break down pitchers. There's no better podcast out there right now. It's just a big fucking commitment to get through it.
100%. I totally agree. Like, it started off just highlighting the two starters. Then we got into the friend decisions. And then Maddie comes with, he waves his papers up in the air, like his grid papers. He writes his notes. And he's got like, I could see 3 or 4 pages there of notes. Like, oh man, he's ready to go. But you know what? He's, I think it's just gotten me more focused on everything about pitching, and I know it's helping him as well too. And I enjoy it. It's like it's a really good Friday night to just be able to do that. But
what I really like, and I mean this sincerely, and it's not a shade against anybody else's podcast, especially any pitching focused podcast, is at the end of the day, you're breaking down pitchers for the purpose of fantasy. That's the purpose of the podcast. It's not telling us how they are as a real life pitcher. It's not just, loving this, the curveball this pitcher is throwing because it's a beautiful pitch. There's enough of that, but it's just about how am I going to help you and me do better in fantasy. And I like the focus, and I love the way that you guys combine, break down the players, the schedules, the projections versus the actual analysis, watching games versus statistical based. I think it's a great, great podcast. If you're not listening to it, I can't recommend it enough. Just make sure you have time set aside to get through it by Sunday.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Thanks, Bob. Good stuff.
I've had to like jump. Like, if I don't get through it through a week, like the next week, like I'll go halfway down just so I can listen to them talk about other pitchers.
Yeah. that's what I had a couple of people say. I think maybe in next week you could start like on Washington Nationals and go up. It's like
we get the point. You like Zach Gallen. Like everybody who has downloaded the podcast is aware you like Zach Gallen because that's team one. But yeah, I don't know what you think about whoever but maybe you are streaming Patrick Corbin this week. I'll never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Against the Washington, I'm like, okay, we got to wrap this up, and we'll skip these guys.
That's right.
It's been fun. It's been absolutely fun. But Jeff, you've been busy on FanGraphs. You've been pumping out fantastic article after article. One of the biggest topics that's sweeping across the fantasy baseball nation is the discussion about Stuff Plus and the pitching models and how it can help us or not help us in fantasy. And so you did a little dive into the Stuff Plus models, as well as there was an article on Baseball Perspectives getting into it. So I figured we could have a discussion so maybe the listeners can kind of get an idea of maybe how we could be using it, if we could be using it, and all that jazz. So if you want to give a little insight into your article, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, the one thing I had to do, and it just kind of broke it down, is just sat there and read every article on it, and especially every one that people had written on it, on what it actually looks at. Kind of the big difference I've found, like they're all looking at like pitch shape and so forth and how that compares to the results of it. But Pitching Bot actually looks kind of more at like StatCast metrics on the batted ball data, while Stuff Plus looks at the results. And I think we're kind of seeing that bear out somewhat in the especially in the baseball prospectus article, where it was like people with on the same teams that have the same defense or the same field all kind of had a good correlation from year to year, but the ones that changed teams and had, you know, their defense change in the parks, the stuff plus wasn't as sticky. So I don't know how that's all going to be addressed, but that's just one of the big differences I found in like the back ends of the model. The next one I did was just kind of a simple thing, was to put the stuff on to like an ERA reference. It's just like Bot Plus is on the scouting scale, which is, if you understand the scouting scale, that's, you can kind of go with that, where 50 is average and it actually works out to like a 4 ERA. Stuff Plus is on like a 100 scale, but it's also not like percent better than league average. It's like a 1010 is like one standard deviation better. So it's a little bit confusing on what the actual scale is. I wish that would be kind of a little bit, like I said, it's just not inherent. So the one thing I did is, yeah, just put them all on an ERA scale, and Stuff Plus, an average of 100 is a 3.5 ERA is kind of the equivalent of what the pitcher did. So that was, I think, just key, because I was writing some articles like, oh, this guy's got a Stuff Plus of, you know, 105 and a Bot of 60. Like, what's that even mean? You know, what compared to his ERA and so forth. So
nobody knows what it means, but it's provocative, Jeff.
Well, then that's just, I was just like, I wrote it on a pitcher and I'm like, I don't know what the hell this means. I kind of feel bad about even doing it. And I was just like, maybe someone else has like looked at it, but I was like, I haven't. So it was, from now on, I'm just going to kind of put the equivalence of it, whatever, if I have to use it. And then I just looked to see if they actually did what they said they were going to do. And in most cases, yes. As a pitcher's stuff goes, is better, they strike out more batters. As it, you know, goes down, it's less. Same with like the command and the overall, were that way. So all of that, the one thing that was a little bit weird, and this is actually something I never didn't ever get until writing this article, is that if a pitcher raises his strikeout rate, his whip's going to go down if everything else stays constant. And it's just because they're just putting less balls in play on the inning basis. His BABIP doesn't change, but his whip will, just because of the denominator that it's on. So that's, like I said, I've been playing this game for years, and it's just something that's like, was everyone else know this? And I'm just like, everyone's like making fun of me behind my back, or what the hell's going on? I have no clue if you guys are. You probably still make fun behind my back.
We've actually moved that meeting, Jeff, from Tuesday evenings to Thursday evenings. It fit into people's schedule better when we get together to make fun of you collectively. But yeah, no, it's a good hour and 50, good times, lots of good times.
I'll give you guys plenty of content, I'm pretty sure. It's like you guys listen to this afterwards, and then you guys can have it that way. So no, it was kind of a baseline. Like, I didn't look at how predictive it was. It was just like, I didn't know a lot of behind it and what the kind of just the baselines for all the different values are.
And like you said, you have to read like all the articles about it and what it was about. How long did that take you?
Not too damn long.
Too damn long. Yeah, I could imagine. There's a lot of written work on it.
And it's kind of a little nerdy. I mean, and so
we're on a fantasy baseball podcast, Jeff. You think that that's the point that it becomes a little bit nerdy?
Yeah, beyond that. But it was like, yeah, it was. I remember the one time I had to read, well, the worst was the initial StatCast stuff. And there was, I'm trying to remember the professor that did all the real work, and like he actually took the balls in the lab and hit it. Dr. Nathan. Alan Nathan,
the baseball physicist.
Yeah. And it was just like, I read the article, I'm like, I don't know what the hell this was. And I read another article, and I was like, I could get one point. I think I had to read each article like three times before I figured out what he was talking about. But these only thing I had to read them once. There was just a lot on it, and it was kind of spread out. Like, it's not, even my article, I feel, isn't like a good example. Like, you kind of need, it'd be good to sit down with the creators of both and have everyone just ask every question they want and spend a good month putting one together.
Can I ask a question in your reading, Jeff? Why is it a black box? Why has Eno and others decided to keep it proprietary as opposed to just publishing the formula so anybody can test it directly and tweak with it? Have they answered that question anywhere?
No, I don't think so. I wonder if there's some ability to like sell it. It's, you know, like the people that aggregate projections and weigh them appropriately. And then they, you know, instead of saying, hey, how do you guys actually do it? We just like, well, we can keep it secret. And therefore there might be some money behind the secrecy, but
wait, so the reason is Ariel Cohen may give them money one day. That cannot be the reason.
Yeah.
I would think maybe even just, too, on like a team level too, like if a team is interested.
None of the, all the teams have something like this. I can't imagine that. I mean, maybe the Rockies, but I can't imagine teams need to pay Eno to get this. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, and well, even last year before they were publicly available, I mean, I created my own. It's a simple Z score of like 7 pitching metrics, you know, like their release point, their spin, their velocity, and just find pitches that are the same as that and how have they performed. It's like I said, that's, I'm not putting it out. I mean, someone else can do the same thing. Like, you can just go get those metrics from FanGraphs, download them and compare them just to find similar pitches. And I think that's what they're kind of doing. It's just going into detail, doing the weighting, actually doing the marketing behind it, trying to make it, you know, everything that's great. That's probably
and to be fair, Eno has done a tremendous job. If that's the goal, is to get to create something and have it widely adopted and known, then if that's the objective, if that's one of the objectives, and I'm not diminishing the other objectives, the actual baseball objectives, he's been wildly successful. Like, the pickup on Stuff Plus has been, all jokes aside, has been tremendous from nothing to where it is now. So I you know, huge kudos to him in terms of the pickup that it's received.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was going to say, like, he does have the, I have seen in the articles, like, there is like a graph of the inputs and what's like weighed more and the other. There's not an exact formula, but like Jeff said, it's measuring those different variables of extension and vertical movement, horizontal movement.
Right. But most other statistics at FanGraphs, if you go to the glossary, if you go to the, whatever it's called on FanGraphs, even if it's super complicated, I can figure out how to calculate this stat myself. If I want to create my own Excel sheet, I can recreate the stat so I can see I want to remove hit by pitch from this, because I think hit by pitch is a stupid inclusion of this. I can rerun it without hit by pitch.
Got it.
I don't really have that. And that's their choice. They own the stat. They can do whatever the fuck they want with the stat, but that's just a reality of how it is right now. I don't know the formula, and maybe that's a problem. Maybe most people shrug their shoulders and say, I don't need to know the formula.
Do you guys think that? Oh, go ahead, Jeff, sorry.
I say the one thing I'm a little bit worried about is, like, I know they've mentioned that they've tweaked with it a lot.
Yeah.
And I know part of it happened in the last 2 years with the Hawkeye pitch tracking, like the pitch tracking system changed. So we only have like 2 years of pitch tracking the certain way. And that's what they've really wanted. So I think that's one thing is, like, we're training it off of 2 years of data and comparing it to 2 years of data. And I think there's going to be some issues with that. Like, if we would, I know one person won't even touch something until they get 5 years worth of data.
Yeah. So, and my prediction is, and again, this is not shade at anybody, is 5 years from now, we'll look back at 2023's version of this and like laugh or shudder at where we were, which does not take away from the fact that somebody's got to be the person who starts doing the work. And other people may improve on it for five years from now. But if nobody starts, you'll never get to the 5 years down the road. True. But I feel quite confident that This is the start, not the finish of it, which is one of the reasons why I'm hesitant to take it as quote unquote truth, because I just don't believe we're at the finish line. I know what a strikeout is. If you tell me what the strikeout percentage of a pitcher is, I feel pretty confident that a 23.4% strikeout rate is a 23.4% strikeout rate. What it means, what the context is, all that we can debate, but that's stat. I know what that means. I don't know what a 105 stuff plus is, and I don't know that that same pitcher throwing the exact same pitches 5 years from now will still be a 105. In fact, as Jeff says, I feel incredibly confident that it'll be something very different 5 years from now. I just do.
Yeah, because I've even heard, you know, I think Eno has been very forward with the fact that they have to retrain it based on like the different classifications on pitchers, or like a guy like Yennier, I know on the Orioles, his changeup doesn't grade well because it doesn't comp to like other changeups. So just stuff like that, and they'll have to retrain it, and it had a different number a couple months later, and these different classifications of pitches too. And I know, Jeff, in your article that you said that you're going to try to dive into like the individual pitch stuff next instead of like the like a collective grade. Is that something you're looking to get like more answers about how it adds to the overall value or how like each pitch performs in terms of their arsenal?
Yeah, there's actually three articles I'm considering, like how predictive it is, mm-hmm. which again, we're on this super small sample, but I think the best way to look at it is what they did in last season compared to what they're doing this year, how, you know, correlated those are. The other one is where they disagree. Like player, I'm trying to think of someone with a great stuff that maybe Trevor May, Dustin May, but
Dustin May, yeah.
Where the disagreements are and what we should be looking for. I'm kind of wondering if there's like a walk rate that the stuff plus just doesn't it's just like over the walk rate overwhelms what their stuff is, and like the stuff may be great, but it's just doesn't get, you know, it's not crossing the plate enough, and they just fall apart. The pitcher does. So that's one I kind of want to do, is that one. And I kind of wonder if some of the individual pitches were that way, like it doesn't, hey, these say that they have a great this pitch. You know, I just want to see what's in common with the pitchers that are missing. So you could kind of notice that. And I think in that same way, you'll look at the individual pitches that same way, where it's like, I do think there's some issues with the changeups. Eno's mentioned that too.
Yep.
And the one thing that this doesn't get, it's all with the shape of the pitch, but there's no like deception. In the pros, there's less of this that I can see. But even if you go to minor league games, you'll see like a pitcher throwing like, what the hell's going on? And it's like a changeup, but he's like changed the speed of his arm. Like the pitch could come out and be a great shape of what a good changeup is, but the pitcher's getting it and basically telegraphing what's happening. I do think there's a point where we need to look at, like a pitcher throws one game, we're probably like, okay, this is the shape. It's a 96 mile an hour fastball with a great amount of ride. Everyone that has done this has been this good or this range of good. But there's a point when probably the pitch's results have to start being weighed in with the actual shape of it. And I just don't, no one's kind of gone there. And I think that's kind of a major step going
and forward. You just hit on my biggest thing with all of this, Jeff. I don't give a shit ultimately about a 105 stuff. It's meaningless to me. It means absolutely nothing to me unless it translates to a better projection than what I can get otherwise. So if Steamer or the Bat have this guy for a, you know, 22.4% strikeout rate, a 4.6% walk rate, this strikeout minus walk rate, this ERA, this whip, that's their current projection based on the way Steamer and the Bat currently do it. And knowing that this pitcher in their first game, in their debut, had a 105, 110, whatever it is, stuff plus, allows me to improve reliably, consistently on that projection, incorporate it into a projection to make me able to make better decisions, objective decisions, not just this guy is awesome. He has a wicked slider. Unless I can get to a point where I can do that reliably. And I know that what the response would be, well, but stuff plus stabilizes very quickly. You just need a certain amount of pitches and suddenly you know what their stuff plus is going to be. That's great. But until you can tell me what it means for fantasy statistics, it's just interesting, not helpful. And I don't think we're anywhere near there. I've heard Derek Carty is trying to figure out how to incorporate a version of this into his projections. I assume the guys at Steamer are starting to work or have worked. I don't know. Maybe you know, Jeff. But that's what makes it useful as opposed to just an interesting thing or part of the analyst toolbox. The same way that if you can go to scouting reports and talk about a guy, that's useful. Like I said, all the shit you guys, you and Modica talk about on your pitcher podcast, it's not just let's read out what Steamer and the bat says and take that as gospel. Obviously, the more analysis you can do, it can all be helpful. But it, for it to go from just an input of the analysis, which is no different than scouting report, which is no different from watching the pitcher pitch and see what you see. It's flawed, but it's useful to something actually really useful is it has to be incorporated with projections. And I know Eno did this going into the season and they're updating the projections, but I need to know over a period of time that it's improved the projections and not just 1 week, 1 month, one season. I need to know that it's actually improved it. So either you can backdate it, but the problem is they don't have 5 years of data, as Jeff says, to be able to test it. So you can't do the Phil thing the way he can with his model because he, you know, Phil goes and decides I'm going to incorporate the following crazy stats. Well, he's just pulling shit off of Fangraphs. So he can test it because he has lots of years of data. We don't have lots of years of data for Stuff Plus or for any of these systems, that at least that to the best of my knowledge, which makes it very hard to go and backdate it and backtest it for long enough, which means it's going to take a long time to be able to reliably say we have improved on the projections and I can show you how I've improved on the projections. But that's where we need to get to. We're not there right now, and it's why I think these systems are making people worse, not better at fantasy. I really do think that Stuff Plus is making people worse fantasy players, not better fantasy players.
That's interesting. And I know that's a hot take. Because you think they're like just focusing just too much on the one thing and not the like all the other things that we incorporate, right? K minus walks, yeah, like all that stuff. It's too much Stuff Plus.
At the end of the day, unless you're a pitcher who is providing me with fantasy statistics, how good you are or how good your individual pitches are inputs, not conclusions. They're not what I care about. They are things that lead to the things that I care about. And I think too many people are getting caught up with the things that lead to what I care about as opposed to the things I actually care about. Strikeout minus walk rate both are lead to the things I care about, but are also the things I care about. And anyways, until I can consistently see that and be proven of it, I could be wrong. Somebody can be listening to this and saying, Rob, you're an old man and you sound like a grumpy old man unwilling to adopt new things. And it's like, fair enough. I'd be the fucking first in line to adopt it when we get to that point. And I use it. I think it's interesting. Also, pitchers list PLV, all the stuff, all of these innovations are really interesting and really good. It's just you have to remember they're inputs. They're not conclusions. That's to me what I think a lot of people are mistaking. If what you say about a pitcher is this is his Stuff Plus number and now I'm done talking about the pitcher, or therefore he's good, it's like that's the start of the conversation. What team is he on? What's his bullpen on his team? How many wins is he going to get? Like the things we ultimately care about as fantasy players, you haven't finished the conversation, I think, yet.
That's true. And I think Nick Pollock on Pitcher List tried to, like, it's attempting to do that, right? With the, it's like the event. It's not just the pitch. It's who is batting, the count, right? He's factoring
totally
all that. Yeah. And I kind of like that. It's just, I guess you get more of a snapshot of the whole, like you said, the whole event, not just the pitch that's coming in. It's just why he maybe threw that pitch on this count and into what batter and to what part of the zone.
The other thing that Baseball Prospectus criticized the Stuff Plus on, and I know Eno has pushed back on this, is a lot of it appears to be team-based and pitchers who change teams. So Baseball Prospectus is one of the weaknesses they saw in the Stuff Plus data, and I'm paraphrasing, and if I get it wrong, it's unintentional, is pretty solid for guys who stay on the team, but for some reason when you change teams, it gets a little bit weaker. Again, Eno pushed back on that, but the team context is very interesting. How much of it is the pitcher versus how much of it is you play on the Dodgers? and there are certain things about playing on the Dodgers that impact your numbers. And it's not necessarily a flaw in the numbers, but if you're claiming this is the characteristics of the pitch that this guy is throwing, then to me, you need to be able to separate those two things out. And I don't really understand why, if that is happening, that's happening in the stats.
That's See, and that's one thing I think, like, in the future, it's like, I mean, it could be the catcher calls better frame. There could be, or he just knows when to, how to get the pitcher going. But I think one thing in the future that may happen is, like, we'll see all these guys change teams. Like, we only had 2 years of it. There's no one gone from Kansas City to the Dodgers or whatever. But once you get enough transactions, you might be able to see, like, oh, this team has found a way to improve this guy's stuff plus this much. But right now, who knows? It could have been injury. It could have just been that they got healed during that time. There's just not enough sample to know if teams can improve it, you know, their stuff plus, or if it's part of the defense. I think that's one of the issues with Eno's, is it's all result-based. It's not StatCast-based. Like, oh, this guy hit the ball at 100 miles an hour at this angle. This is normally this. Eno's like, it's a double, home run, or an out. So I think that that's just one big issue with the actual stuff plus.
And the only thing I want to say before we move on is, and I'm not backtracking on anything I said, because my takes may have been hot. None of this is personal. I think he's a great guy and a really, really smart baseball and pitcher analyst. So it's certainly not a personal shot. And I think, again, the work he's done to start asking these questions and trying to quantify them is massive. So it's a massive amount of work, and it's a massive step forward. To the extent I'm skeptical, it has nothing to do with him. It's just my natural skepticism. And I think that's an important distinction. Like, it's really, I'm really not taking shots at anybody whatsoever with any of my comments. And two, to the extent I've mischaracterized or misunderstood anything, I think I pay more attention to this than 99% of people out there. So if I misunderstand how some of these things work, I'm not sure it's me. I think that the lack of clarity on a lot of these things might be to blame. And I think there needs to be a lot more clarity about what these things are at. Jeff shouldn't have to read 42 different articles to understand what this statistic is actually doing and how it's working. I don't think.
Great point. Natural skepticism over everything versus just the
point. Yeah, you should come up with an emoji for a guy who just is naturally skeptical and like argues things for the sake of it. Rob, I think that people would like that. I think people would dig that.
You know, but I think you make a good point, Rob. This is nothing personal, you know, at all. He's, like you said, he pushed the needle. He's getting us to, you know, he's trying to drive the information forward into diving into pitch stuff. And yeah, he's awesome dude. He's great analyst. He knows a ton about baseball. This is nothing like that. It's just like your natural inclination. Like you said, you have people who would rather, you know, test years of data that's available versus the 2 years that we have and versus what is it actually doing. So I think it's good. I think it's just part of the discussion that makes us all better or worse fantasy players, as you mentioned, you know, just trying to really understand what makes, you know, a better equation going forward. And Jeff, you also wrote another article on ball percentage. It's something that I actually really love to use in the pitcher toolbox, and nice, quick article, but you really got to the point and you really kind of broke down why it's effective. So you want to give a little rundown on that? Well, Jeff is gone.
Oh, Jesus Christ, we're here talking by ourselves. Is this something I said? I bet one of the like possums from the farm bit off the Wi-Fi wire, and Jeff had to go shoot it or something to get back online.
Jeff, are you back? Yeah, he's... His name is there, but he's
you can save the second article you wanted to talk about for hour four of this podcast, Rob.
No, my internet just dropped out.
Oh yeah, no, it was one of the barn animals who caused that to happen, Jeff. A snake get in the Wi-Fi wires.
I have no idea. It's got some snake probably wrapped itself around it and shorted it out or something.
It happens, man. It happens.
Yeah, so Jeff, I just introduced your ball percentage article, and I was just saying how it's an important part of my toolbox for pitcher evaluation. And you wrote a nice, quick to the point article about it in FanGraphs. If you want to get into what you found on it, or what you know, what you advanced from what was previously found.
Yeah, there's actually if it's nothing new, it's more of just a reference because it's not a publicly. Just an easy reference where like ball percentage stabilizes really quickly. It's very predictive of walk rates going forward on like a short sample. And kind of what, when you look at like a ball rate for like a pitcher during a game or like a couple starts, you'll be able to see, you know, maybe their walk rates are out of place. I actually have like a little tool that just quickly looks at what the projected is and what their actual was. So coming into this game, I mean, it was when we're talking about the article talked about Tanner Beebe, and he was just like at the top of the list of like heaviest regressors because he hadn't walked anyone. And he was coming into the game with like a 38-39% ball percentage, which is like 10%. So he was just expecting heavy regression coming, and it came more than even that. I mean, it was he was just horrible during the game. I think 20% walk rate, something crazy. And it was kind of just, yeah, a quick reference. I think on like the small sample where it's useful, it's predictive of walk rates going forward. You can just kind of do it as a quick check. The only problem is at FanGraphs, where I'm 99% of the time, just you have to do the division, break out the little calculator and divide the two. I don't know if it's available any other place just to like look up, but that's the only issue, is it's just not its own category right now.
And can't you just create your own leaderboard though with ball percentage and use that new tool Excel to do that?
That's what I have. Just a custom leaderboard that balls into total pitches and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
You know? Nice and simple.
And then the other thing is I did create a equivalency equations. Like if you want to turn the ball percentage into walks per nine or walk percentage. So that was also available. It was just kind of like a quick reference also. A lot of times I have to do these because it's like, instead of writing this up in one simple article when I'm like doing mining the news or something like that, I can just reference this and move on. Because even in this one, I referenced the article where it's like, what walk rate's too high? And it's like, yeah, you just can't have a walk rate around. You start getting around 3, 5, or 9%. So you just... your whips, it just ends up hurting you too much.
See, this is a great example. And again, it's not being diminutive. It's not being negative of like, this is something that my guess is 95% of people who play fantasy don't do. They may do it in the off season, but they're not doing it on a regular basis. I think if you start doing this and looking at this, your fantasy decision-making, it's not to be all and end all, obviously. I don't think anybody would claim that, but it's a very usable, actionable item to evaluate a pitcher. And I think it's much closer to making a decision than what we were talking about on the first topic here, even though it's pretty like it's old. Yeah. We've been having balls in baseball since as long as baseball existed. The notion of looking at ball percentage as opposed to walk versus walk percentage is so simple and so intuitive and so like caveman like, and yet you're not doing it. I'm not doing it. I know, Rob, you do it. I've been doing it for a long time. But it's like, this is so easy and so close to just helping you with these little edges throughout a fantasy baseball season. Do that. Like, that's just lying right there and you're not using it right now. You should use it, because we all know what impact walks have for pitchers in fantasy.
Absolutely. I always got drawn to it because Baseball HQ always had a nice little research abstract into it in their baseball forecaster every year. And Steve Weimer advanced a little bit on it this year, just in terms of relief pitchers and how to look for ratio protectors. And it's such a good, valuable tool. It's in my I have a spreadsheet too for like relief pitchers as well. And for like last 14 days, last 30 days, whatever, just trying to get that snapshot of who can really help you protect the, you know, the whip and the ARI, even though this year it's going to take a lot of help to help those ratios. It's like another thing, right? That's another hot topic right now, with everyone just like, what the F is going on in baseball?
I have a great idea for you, Rob. You and Modica, when you get through the 30th team starting rotation, you need to start back at the top and go through each of the nine relievers on all 30 teams. And once you've completed all 270 relief pitchers throughout fantasy baseball, that's when you wrap for the night.
For the week.
Talk to you next week when we'll talk to you in 10 minutes when we start back with Arizona's rotation.
That
one
is good.
Oh man, that's too much. Fantastic. But yeah, absolutely great tool. Man. So if you're not using it, you know, start incorporating it a little bit into it. So at this point of the season, I just wanted to get you like to pick you guys' brains about like how to evaluate players and what's the percentage of like what's the breakdown of what you're looking to evaluate a player? Is it this year's stats? Like how much is it this year's stats? How much is it preseason projections? And how much of it is rest of season projections? And how do you balance that to make an evaluation on a player? Jeff. Or Rob.
I think Jeff Possum's back. It's certainly not preseason projection at this point because the rest of season projection is a better barometer of who that player is as of this second than the preseason projection. The rest of season projection, for anybody who doesn't know, starts with the baseline of the preseason projection, but then is adjusted as every single game is played. So if you follow a player day after day, the as you would expect, the changes are almost all, other than if the player gets injured, the changes are minute. Why? Because if a hitter has a 296 WOBA, their true talent is a 296 WOBA. They need to do a lot, good or bad, for it to move. But it can move, and it can move pretty dramatically. And it's fascinating to me seeing guys like you can go back to. So I go back to the preseason projections just to compare the delta between who they thought they were now, whatever, 6 weeks ago versus today. Who can change besides injuries quickly? And injuries is really playing time driven is pitchers. So both steamer and the bat incorporate, for example, velocity. So if a pitcher used to sit 95 with the fastball in the last, you know, five starts, they've been sitting 92, 91, dramatic change, 93. You'll see changes in the going forward projections pretty dramatically. So I spend a lot of time looking at the rest of season projections. I have an aggregation for multiple sources of the rest of season projections that when I'm doing my fab each week, I look at both in terms of potential pickups, who pops up as a potential, like not just a streamer, but an actual hold for the whole season. But also evaluating guys on my team, because it's one of my weaknesses is I'm not great at realizing Gene Segura has been just horrendous. Yeah. And I keep starting you Gene Segura because I think in my mind I have Gene Segura. He's reliable. He's going to work things out. And unless and then suddenly I've been playing Gene Segura and he's been killing me week after week after week. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Just like blindly starting Gene Segura. So I find grounding myself in those rest of season projections. I may want to bench him even if the rest of season projections say Gene Segura is still somebody who should be on a 15 team roster. But I think going back to those rest of season projections is a very helpful reality check. In terms of where would I draft that player if we were drafting today, and therefore how should I make decisions in terms of in-season numbers? It's important because it drives managerial decisions. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, from a sabermetrics perspective, rest of season projections from the first day of the season to the last day of the season is a more accurate predictor of what the player is going to do than what they have done already this season. And I've said this before, it's one of the hardest things for people to believe. It's hard for me sometimes to believe, but it's true. But managers believe in hot streaks, and there's conflicting evidence. If a player is on fire, there is some evidence that there is hot hands. There's also lots of evidence that it's full of shit. But the most important thing is if a guy, you know, went 12 for his last 26, he's probably going to start the next seven games. The odds of him starting the next seven games are a lot higher than if he than if he's gone 0 for 26. So that's where I use in-season numbers, is to try to figure out, like, I first off, is the player playing every day? Is the player platooning? That's very important to know. But it's also for those short-term decisions. I could give a if he's somebody who I think I'm going to hold for the full season or pick up for the full season, then I could give a shit what he's done the last 2 weeks. Maybe start sit, it matters, but not in terms of am I holding him or not. Then the rest of season projections. But for those short-term, I'm just thinking about this week, it does matter. And like, you don't want to be obtuse and pretend like it matters not at all, because the manager's looking at it, the team is looking at it. So I incorporated it that way. I think Jeff's back now again. Another possum in the possum in the Wi-Fi again, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know what it is this time. I don't know what's going on. Make sure you always send a Rob first there each time, so he knows if I'm going to be around. Yeah, the balance, it depends. Pitchers and hitters. Pitchers, I'm probably giving them like 3-4 starts before I start making decisions. You can know what the velocity, you can know what their swinging strike rate. You can see if, look back a little bit, see if they're injured. But even with some of the stats that stabilize pretty quick, you can know like ball percentage and even swinging strike rate if they've changed. So that's one. So like with the pitchers, I'm doing it that. With hitters, it's tough. Like it takes almost 2 months for them to kind of have anything that really starts stabilizing. But I do agree with Rob. The one thing I've done is created like an X lookup of, I had the beginning of season, which are still available, Steamer projections or any of the projections. And then they have the current one, and just see how much those have changed. You can just kind of compare one to the other. Like Gene Segura's, his projections down 60 OPS points, which is quite a bit considering like everyone else is up because the ball, everyone's hitting now. So anyone that's like down or the same is usually not where you want him to be. So he's taking quite a bit of a hit right now. They're still playing him, which is good. The one thing I always notice first before, if you want to notice if someone's going to start losing playing time, is usually you get the drop in the lineup and then you get the out of the lineup or partial way. But he's yeah, I've got him in a few places and I like the flexibility on my bench. And that's kind of a lot of times just in some DCs, he's the only guy rolling out because he's the warm body that's still alive or not on the IL. But a lot of it just drives playing time. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things. I think everyone's staying up on it, and it's just one you have to continue to stay up on. It changes so much from week to week or whatever, because in the high stakes leagues, these people have paid thousands and thousands of dollars of entry fees to be in them. No one had Marcell Ozuna rostered the week before. And then he goes off and hits a bunch of home runs and everyone adds him. Cause it was just like, oh, he's got playing time now. And he has a 2-home run game and his random, you know, he was playing like every 3-4 days and he hits 2 home runs and they give him another game and he hits a couple balls and he plays a game and he hits a home run. And now he's a full-time player. So it was just like, it changes so much. And, you know, hitters go on these hot streaks, but he went on the hot streak, got some playing time, and now everyone wants him. I don't know if it's the right move. Does his projection really change much? Probably not, but he is playing for a good team and hitting the middle of the lineup.
Yeah, though Travis d'Arnaud being back may also change the situation, not to get into a Marcell Ozuna conversation.
Oh, and
per se.
Yeah, they've got too many of the DHs. Like, Ozuna really can't go in the outfield, but Rosario isn't the answer either there.
Well, and you really can't take Murphy out of that lineup right now. I mean, you can give him the odd day off as a catcher, but he's one of the best hitters in baseball, so it's tough to sit Sean Murphy right now.
Well, and that's what happened with Miranda or with Minnesota. It was just like they have too many DHs and first basemen right now.
Yeah.
And Miranda can't really throw from third base. It's just like, well, he's just going to have to go down to AAA to hit with Kirilloff and Buxton was permanently a DH. And
is Buxton a permanent DH now? Like, have
he hasn't played outfield yet.
Accepted. Yeah. I know. It's. Anyways, it's bizarre to me. Like, that's so much of his value, and I understand wanting to keep him healthy, but it's so much of his value is the outfield. It's so interesting.
It really is, and there's no way to tell him to take it easy. He doesn't have that switch, it seems like. And he's like, I think been on the record saying that I can't not go hard like as I can for every ball. Like, it's just not in his mindset to just take it easy in center field. So, I mean, he like Jeff said, he hasn't played the outfield at all. He actually, you know, had a couple stolen bases back to back games. So I don't know if this is the permanent route, but it's such a weird path to an Edgar Martinez like career after being one of the best center fielders in the league. Just really, really interesting. Let's touch a little bit on waiver process. I know a lot of people wanted to get into, you know, what are the determinations and like how we're fabbing each week or what we're looking at. So if you guys want to just touch on a couple of things that you think would be, you know, good actionable advice for everyone to, like, you know, try to make your fab decisions a little better.
Yeah, I'll start while I still have internet connection. the one thing that I kind of just start with is look at the drops or the players I didn't get last week. I mean, it's just like if I had a drop of 8 and I've kind of wanted, like, I didn't get to 3, 4, 5, or 6, like, they may be the guys I want this next week. So I just kind of roll those guys back into a list for the next week. And then if there's any league, I'll just go through those drops. It just sticks out so I don't miss it. And just re-add them. A lot of times it's also, I saw someone drop Trevor Story I had in the league. Like, they couldn't hold him anymore, but his ownership's going to be so low, I kind of just added him to my list. So I just kind of keep track of him in that league. So when it gets close, I can go ahead and re-add him. You kind of have to be careful with some of those guys. Like you don't know if they were drafted or not. So that's kind of just the main thing. And then during the week, I have just an Excel spreadsheet of just the players that I like. This guy's interesting. He threw a start. I can look into him later. I don't have time, but I just don't want to lose track of the name, but it may not, I mean, there may be nothing interesting about him at all. It's just like, I'm going to try to look at someone I have on my list. It's just like Jake Irvin. I don't know what his style, what he did or anything. So I'll go from there. And then,
or like Andy Ibañez. Oh, he's playing now. He's 30 years old. Is he interesting? He's on my list. I'm like, I'm waiting to do a little dive on him.
Well, yeah, he's a little bit further. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think I've had him on some Fabulous, especially in OCs, but it's just like, well, I got to, if you're in an active league, especially the one we are in, like Vegas, where everyone's still all in it, it's just like, well, you got to make the freaking longer list. The main events definitely become that way. Like, you got to add a huge long list. I think Jenstead said he had a list of 13. He got no one on this last week. Crazy. I was like, wow. Like, oh my God, dude. Then my next big one starts on Friday and Saturday. It's, for me, it's the lineups, just looking through them when I write that article, trying to see who's playing and not. And then my waiver wire article, see if anyone's sticking out on it. Then I finish the article and read everyone else's stuff. Like, I don't look at anyone else's when it comes into the article. I just kind of just go on my own. And then the other things, I just, once the article goes published, it sends it out, I never really look at it again. I know people ask me in the chat if I change anything, but it's just like, I have to have a life at some point. It's like, I look at it again Sunday morning, add anyone I think, and then it's just done. So I can just kind of, have my own things going on with life. You can just keep adjusting those articles left and right, especially on Sunday when every save or home run just moves a guy's value up a ton.
Yeah, the old value. Sunday tax. The old Sunday tax. I was just talking about this last night with Dom on my Fab pod, is that, you know, Christopher Morel was more popular 2 weeks ago because he had 7 RBIs in the minor leagues on Sunday than he was this week, when you presumably he was a little closer to you know, coming into the team. So it's just so funny. You even get a minor league tax on Sunday. It's so wild.
Yeah, though the Cubs said this week going into Sunday that until there's a full-time job, we're not calling up Morel. Right. And I know a Major League Baseball team lied about their players or changed their minds. Why? I've never. But it wasn't just the like he's closer. He actually seemed further away to me. And I obviously I misread the situation this week, but he seemed further away because the Cubs said, we're calling up this first baseman, even though we have three guys who are shitty or two other guys who are shitty, but play the same position. But we're not calling up Morel until basically somebody gets hurt. Turns out not so much, though maybe somebody is hurt. My process is very different. I don't need to produce an article. I don't need to produce a podcast. I only give a shit about my five teams. So I only care about my teams. So like Jeff, during the week, I use the watch list feature on the NFBC website. I also only play at one website, which helps. I only play the NFBC. So I use the watch list function and keep, so any player that is interesting, first off, I clear out my watch list from last week. If I didn't pick him up, there was a reason I didn't pick him up, unless there was a reason I want to keep them. So if it's a prospect that happens to be dropped in a few leagues or an injured player, and I just want to keep monitoring them week by week, I'll keep them on, but I try to clear out the watch list or else it becomes unusable, right? Like if you end up having 80 players on the watch list, you have no watch list. It's everybody. I clear out the whole league, watching everybody. Well, then it's just the players list. So I clear out my watch list and then I start the watch list again day by day as news comes, as players get called up, as all of those things happen. And I do keep a sheet with an explanation on why I added them because I'm old and stupid. And some guys are obvious. Other guys will be like, I don't even know who this is. Why is he on my watch list here? So I need a note saying, I read it, this article. Here's a link to the article. This is interesting. You should at least look deeper into him. Then usually either Friday night or Saturday, depending on whether I'm drinking on Friday night, I take five pieces of paper. I've said this before. I'm old school and it really helps for me. And the first thing I do is for all five of my teams, I write the letter P down 9 times and I map out what is my pitching staff for next week look like. If I have Strider, I just write down Strider. I don't even need to look at who Strider is facing next week. It doesn't matter. I'm starting Strider. And you go through, there's some that are, I don't care what Razzball says about his projection. I don't care what the bat says for his weekly projection. I know I'm starting him. Similarly with closers. If I have an active closer who has the job, unless it's a weird situation, especially this time of year, I don't care where I am in saves. If I have a closer, I'm playing them. So let's say by the time I go through my platinum team, I have 7 of 9 pitcher spots that I know, like this is done. And then I have 4 or 5 guys on my team that are potentials. So I need to figure out who I want, or I have 4 or 5 guys, but I have nobody like this 9th pitching spot. I need to get somebody, a middle reliever, somebody, because all 4 of these other starters on my roster are unusable. Okay. So I now know on this team, I make a note of this. I need to pick up a pitcher for this week. Similarly, when I do this first cut, it's, are there any pitchers I want to drop? So are there a pitcher on my team who is just a drop right now for whatever reason, either I picked him up last week to stream him for 1 week, or more likely like the world has changed this, you know, Kyle Wright, I am dropping Kyle Wright because he's injured for the next 2 months. So he's a cut. So I make a note. I have 1 cut off my pitching staff so that when I start putting together my actual claims, I know I have a cut from pitching, and I know on this team I need a pitcher for this week, or I do not need a pitcher. That's the other thing I note. There may be a pitcher I want, but I don't need a pitcher. So I've done now 5 teams, 5 pitching staffs. I have a pretty good feel for what my pitching situation is. Oh, and then I listen to a 9-hour pitching podcast to see if they tell me anything that I hadn't thought of before. And then I flip the page over to the other side, and I do the exact same exercise. Again, this is before I've done anything else with my staff. So if I have, you know, Bo Bichette on my team, I just, well, maybe sometimes if they have a 5-game week with 2 games, maybe you ask questions. But usually in regular times, you write your studs down. So I have a shortstop on this team. Don't need to think about shortstop. I have these 2 outfielders. I'm always playing these 2 outfielders. Catchers, especially catchers. Don't give a shit if it's 5-game week. If I have Sean Murphy right now, if I have Will Smith, I just write them down because I don't want to think about it. That's one of the reasons you draft good catchers is I'm not fucking around with catchers. It's like I have a catcher. If I have a shitty catcher, then I need to know and figure it out. So then when I've done that exercise, it's very, and then I also do the, are there any hitters I want to cut? So then I have between the 2 sides of the page who my cuts are this week. and what I need. So then I start digging into the weekly projections for the lineup, especially. It's like Monday to Thursday. Where are their holes? Like, where are their guys I really shouldn't be playing? I have no third baseman on this team this week. I may have a third baseman other weeks, but because of matchups, I don't have a third baseman. I need to get a third baseman on this team. Well, that's really useful. So now through that exercise, I haven't looked at who's available yet. I have no idea who's available. There may not be a third baseman available, but I know for all my teams, what pitchers I need, what hitters I need very specifically, and then what cuts I have. Obviously, as the season gets going, I start focusing more on categories. Like, unless there's a structural weakness, at this point, I'm just trying to maximize value. If I know this team is just sunk on stolen bases, then I know that. I know this team needs stolen bases. But this actual exercise is just right now, this point of the season, maximize value. And then I start digging into, so who's available? Well, if I know I need a third baseman, then I start digging into the weekly projections. Okay, who has a nice third base week this week? It's not the best third baseman this week, Monday to Thursday. Who's the best third baseman? And I start putting together my lists. I don't go to Vlad's or Jeff's or any of the other articles until I have put together, I have, not with dollar figures, but full waterfalls for everything I need. And then I go to Vlad and Jeff and Ryan at HQ. And there's a few others that I look at more than anything, just to see if I missed anybody, which I almost always have. Like, yep, almost always I have missed a guy, and they're huge resources, but they're supporting what I already have done, as opposed to let me just take Vlad's awesome article or Jeff's awesome article and cut paste into the article. Like, it's really just trying to make sure I didn't screw up, which I always have, and they have spent more time on it than I have. Necessity of writing an article like that means you have to spend that much time on it, and I don't put dollars in until Sunday. Like, there's no point in me fucking around with dollars until Sunday afternoon. So there's other things, but that's a long way of walking through my process. It works for me. Lots of other people would hear that and say, that's a stupid why would you do it that way? Start with who's available, and then I'm not saying my way is the right way, but that's my way.
Okay, Jeff,
I'll just go back to my Sunday one. Like I said, I usually have those two, but I'm really close to you. Is the one thing I will look at before I go to the team is I will look at the standings just to see if there's something. When I start kind of even looking like, oh, I need, this team will need some speed. Like, you may even know it, like with your projections some way, but it's like, okay, I'm just really hurting this way. Usually right now it's speed, home runs, and saves. Yep. And maybe attempt to save my ratios, but not really. Like, but those are the ones like, okay, this team has yet to have a save. Like, we really need to be looking for saves at this point. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and then, yeah, exactly. The next one I go to is I literally on the NFBC start at the top. Like, are these two catchers good? Is there probably anyone available? No. Or most of the time, like the way I've drafted is I've had one crap one that I'm trying to improve. And so that one's like either Sable or Wong, like on every team. It's one of those two is the crap one I've, you know, upgraded up to. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, just going through like which in your lineup, and then you're looking at those two, we haven't had the two-game weekends recently, but usually like the two games to start the week. Like, oh, is there anyone that way? Like, just aren't playable. Like Kyle Schwarber, it's like, well, he's probably not going to have my batting average. He's got two games. Like, let's see if we can find an outfielder, Gavin Sheets, to plug in for him for those, at least those first four games. Because it's anyone that's going to get four games versus two over a whole season, it's really tough for even Aaron Judge to outperform them. You know, someone reasonable, because it's that difference in that. So, I just worked my all the way down there. With the closers, yeah, most of the time they go in. I do have some stuff now where I've got a lot of like halftime guys that it's tough to figure out who's totally doing that. And it's like, I know in one league I went with some guy had one of the five game weeks this week. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to throw in the, you know, I sit him, or I might even have went with three of them instead of four. Like I might have four.
Yeah,
I think with one league I have one real guy and three fake guy, you know, three partials, and it's like, all right, I'll just roll out one real and two partials this week.
No, I mean, on my platinum team, I have Bednar, Puck, and Will Smith, And I, you know, some weeks the best option is play all three of them. Some weeks it's just know whichever of Puck and Smith I pick, the other guy is going to get three saves and a win this week. So just decide which guy. Which do you want a crazy Marlins week or do you want a crazy Rangers week? Just sit that guy, and it's guaranteed the guy you is on your bench will have a great week.
Yeah,
that's tough, and you miss out on those, especially when you're trying to pinpoint which
it's part of the fucking. I mean, I am joking. You don't get to complain about that. That's baseball, that's right? That's just how it works. You can try to rationalize how many wins it is. You can go to Vegas lines and say who's favorite in more games. At the end of the day, fuck, like it's just gonna happen. It's just it'll play how it plays.
I will tell you one thing. This is the first year in a long time I've been in straight only league. And it's kind of a really deep one. It's great. Like I need to improve on Kevin Newman, and I go look, and there's literally like five guys available. Like, well, none of them are better than Kevin Newman. I'm done. Like it's the quickest fab I ever do. It was, I know Leiter was available this week. So everyone put in a lot of money for him. So that was kind of it. But you look at the pictures, you're like, my staff's crap, but this is all crap too. And I just move on with my life.
Time savings
is amazing.
Yeah.
How about you, Rob? What process things do you do? I mean, you're producing so much content now. Do you find that on the one hand, you are on top of things like you've probably never been before, but I would think it would be hard to find the time once you're done, jokes aside, all the podcasts and everything that you're producing to actually spend time on your teams because you've just done so much baseball and you have a life and you have like family and you have dogs and leaky roofs and all the other shit you need to deal with in the world.
It's been a lot. There's times where I've definitely felt overwhelmed, but I still try to, like, I always try to look at the silver linings and everything, and that it is making me better. It's making me more in tune with the news, with playing time, and that you know, This is what I chose to do too. It's like, you know, I can't just now think.
Really, okay. nobody forced you to do 87 hours of fantasy baseball podcasts a week.
It's what I chose. So I can't complain about it. But no, I have very similar processes to both of you guys. I have like a running watch list. I have, you know, wherever I usually have, like, if I'm out with the dogs or I'm outside, it's in my note, you know, app on my phone. I'm just throwing guys in as I hear pods or I see box scores or I see news. And then I throw it into the watch list. And like you said, Rob, huge thing is to clean that out too. Cause I don't know, you know, if you've guys incorporated the new fab systems as well that the NFBC has, but you know, if you want, you can import your watch list into your fab list. So if there's that guy you got to get off your team, like Robbie Ray, you know, you can import the watch list and you'll have, you know, all those guys on a string. So you don't want to have a guy that you like 3 weeks ago on that string, just in case you use that tool. I started to use it. There's still some things I don't like about it, but and then I'm like you said, Rob, I think the biggest thing, and I heard this from Scott Gentad like 3 years ago when I really started getting into more of the NFBC realm and podcast, and I realized that, like, I was like, wait a minute, I just dove into all these players and I don't fucking need any of them. Like you said, so they're available, like, great, but they don't have a place on my team. I have outfielders. I don't need this guy. And that's what I remember Scott saying. He writes down his team, and like you said, like, looking at what you need, where are the holes? Do I need pitchers? Do I need to replace a guy Friday to Sunday? Like Jeff said, he's a lefty facing three lefties, and then you immediately go into attack mode from what you need. And I try to divide it too into like you said, Rob, earlier, like with the rest of season projections, like really just trying to see if there's a guy that's a clear upgrade on my team rest of season. That's the first thing I try to identify, because that'll trump any stream I'm trying to make. So I'll do that first, and then I go right into you know, who's playing Monday to Thursday, who's got games here, who's got the platoon matchups there, and I just try to maximize as much as I can. And this week and this weekend, it was fairly different for me, because I decided to do my teams first earlier in the week and set my lineups and just look at what I needed first. And then I did the content afterwards. And then I went back and like did my analysis on my own teams even further. And I think it helped me at least just get like a decent head start on my own teams first, and then do the fab list and the fab article and the fab pod. And then you know, I spent the Sunday, a beautiful day here in Jersey at the beach with my wife having some drinks. And I went home and I said, fuck it, I'm just going to pay up $402 for Bryce Miller. Cause that's what happens when
as one does.
The last time I did that was Manoa 2 years ago in the same situation. He was like, I had Jacob deGrom and like, I need to, you know, have this hopeful next pitching guy to help me there. But that's pretty much my main process, a lot like what you guys do, and just trying to eliminate, like you said, that time where you get.
I was going to say, is your takeaway from that, Rob, don't go drinking on the beach Sunday afternoon.
Do it.
Or don't draft Jacob deGrom, keep doing what you're doing because it's working. Don't draft Jacob deGrom.
No, but do that. Do that on Sundays. Like I have like this so rigid and so like looking over things so much, and there was something freeing about when you could just say, no, this is the number I want to do. And I don't care if it's an overbid. I don't care if this guy is not as good as I think he is. I think it kind of released me a little bit from my, something.
I think what is so comforting of having done the work on your own team is the worst feeling in fab. Well, the worst feeling in fab is waking up on a Monday morning realizing, holy shit, I was drunk and I bid a lot of money on players who are awful. I know I'm saying you did that with Miller, but that's a bad feeling. The second worst feeling that has happened to me too many times over the years is you wake up Monday morning and you look at your, okay, let's set the lineup now. And you realize, holy shit, I needed an outfielder. I didn't get an outfielder, and now I'm putting Michael Brantley in my lineup, who I've been stashing and I know won't play at all this week because I just don't have anybody. I fucked up fab. I needed an outfielder and I didn't bid on one. Whereas if you've done the work and the only thing you're focused on is I need an outfielder, I need a third baseman, or I don't have somebody, like it's not that I can't set a legal lineup or the system won't let you do it, but I don't have a real option. You wake up Monday and it's like, where, I don't have a third baseman I want to play. There's nothing you can do. Whereas if you've spent the time, even if you're rushed in fab on Sunday because of kids, because of what life, you won't wake up without something because you'll spend the time, even if you only have an hour, to make sure I'm going to list 7 third basemen who are playable this week. If there are 7 third basemen, I'll get one of them unless you're Jen Stad and you go 0-13 in your biggest league. But most people won't happen. So what it means is the worst case scenario is you wake up Monday and you've got an option when you're setting your lineup. And that's comforting when life takes over, I find.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And I'll touch on one more thing too, like you said, Rob. Because I'm doing my own stuff now, at 9 o'clock, when I'm kind of really comfortable with everything I've done with my team, I go and look at Jeff's article. I go to look at Vlad's and I go to look at Ryan's. And it's like you said, like, oh, I forgot about this guy. I've been like finding more and more less of that, but also too, it's just really to look at that market expectation, as you know, Vlad has some influence on a lot of people out there, so it's more so okay, I also like to look at the previous weeks and last year too, more so in reference. That'll drive my actual dollar bids, because I think it's key to look at that. If you looked at George Kirby and Bryce Miller, it was pretty close, and you can draw those conclusions, even those Monday to Thursday type players, or a guy like Gavin Sheets, you know, it's like, okay, what do these archetypes, I call them archetypes, what are these archetypes going for? What did this lefty bat who plays 7 righties go for in a week? You know, Brandon Belt, he went for $13. Kerry Carpenter went for $17. It's like just trying to find that so you know where to be, because in my last 2 years, I think that's where, you know, I did my postseason fab analysis. I'm like, man, I have all these gross overspends. I have to get better at this. So that's what I'm really trying to narrow in on, just making those bids. It's okay just going for $3 on a string. You don't have to go to 13 or 21 and be you know, so you know, much way from the, what the market is thinking. So I think looking back in previous weeks, previous years, really helps me drive in on that a little bit.
Especially it's for me, if I have a guy, like a sleeper guy, if he's not mentioned in Vlad or Jeff's article, I know the odds that I can get him for a dollar or two are very high. I sometimes question myself, like if Jeff and Vlad didn't think they were good enough to even write two lines about them, what do I see that they don't see? Because it's a reasonable question at that point. But like, for example, 2 weeks ago, and he's turned out to be crap, so he's waived already, but I bid a couple of bucks on Ramos on Cincinnati. He was playing every day after he came up. He was not mentioned in Jeff or Vlad's articles. And I had and I was like, holy shit, like he's not even mentioned. He's starting every day. It's a shitty team, good ballpark, you know, shown a little bit of power. He's 31 years old or whatever he is. But there's a shot, like there's a shot he is another Menzies or like old guy who just pops up. So I'd like to take a shot for a week and see what I have there. Whereas if he had been in Vlad and Jeff's articles, I want to take a shot for a dollar or two. Do I want to take a shot for $15? Probably not. So it's nice to know, but it's also good to be humble and say, if these guys don't think he's good enough to spill two lines of ink on Rob, the odds this works out are very low.
That's a good point. I kind of just been tired and not wrote anymore. I kind of hit like 0.2 words.
Totally. And that's real. That's real life too. Is it may just be like, I can only cover 30 players a week or 40 player, however many players a week. And it's like, at a certain point you have to stop writing because you also have a life, and Vlad has two young kids. So like, there's a certain reality to that too.
Yeah. I guess the one last thing I will recommend everyone do, and this is even looking at the news, I would rather miss the news, is go look at your bids on the NFBC. It has the pendings claim page.
Yes. Great, Jeff.
15 minutes, 10 minutes. The one thing that I'm notorious of is dropping the same guy in like three bid lists.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a second, I'd miss someone or didn't change one over or something. But it has your bids. It has who's you're dropping, who you're adding. And just look over it. It's all on one page. You can just kind of scroll down. Make sure you refresh it if you do change one. But you can do that with all your leagues. Just make sure you're not dropping $311 on some guy you only want to spend $31 on or something like that. So that page is just a godsend. But give yourself, 10, 15 minutes to be able to fix, or like you're adding some guy that got hurt during the day and you didn't even notice on some other league if you've got a bunch. But just check over your bids one last time.
My rule that I have imposed, because I use that religiously, is I use it around 9:45 Eastern time, so just before things lock. And my rule is, after I have done that final check, I am not allowed to fuck around with anything anymore. That is my final, like, I can close my eyes knowing, especially like my fear is a guy like Miller, where there's multiple Millers. I don't want to be the guy who bids on the wrong Miller. So I'm like double checking that, as Jeff says, making sure that somebody I want to bid $13 on, I didn't bid $130 on by mistake, like all of those things, because I should be at a point where like the waterfall I've thought through, it's the stupid shit that I'm using it for. That is your like, did I fuck up? I don't want to fuck up. Whereas if I go back and start fiddling with it again, then I need to recheck to fuck up, because it's when I'm fiddling that I'm most likely to fuck up. So that is my, like, at 9:45, unless there's break, obviously it's my self-imposed rule. If there's something breaking, I can go back and change it, but there's no more like cold panic. I need to raise him by $17 more if I want to get him. It's like, we're done. It's all good now. It's just what it is. The gods will play it out how it plays out. But I sleep better having done that final check on that page.
Absolutely. The wrong Miller or the wrong Bryce, as fellow Meatball Mafia, you know, member Steve Brunn, like really good NFBC player as well. He put Bryce Wilson instead of Bryce Miller. And it's just, if it sucks. And he owned, you know, he's like, yeah, I own up to it. It was a terrible mistake. But it's just like, if you go through that process and you catch that, or like Jeff said, if you have 311 and you really want 31 or three, it's so big. Sometimes the, you know, your keys get a little clunky or you misclick, and that's really so big. And I think it's good too, to just give yourself a little sanity check across all your leagues. Like Jeff said, like I did the multiple drops too earlier in the season. I felt like a meatball for it. I'm like, oh, terrible. And fellow league mate of mine, Jeff Mitzef, I had picked up Bryce Miller in week two because he was drafted, dropped in week one. I picked him up in week two and Robbie Ray got hurt. Didn't hold on to him because I had to have Chris Bubich the next week. So dropped him, right? And so Jeff went to go pick him up 2 weeks ago, and that's what happened. He listed this duplicate drop. So instead of, you know, him going for 312 and 330 in my league this week, you know, Jeff Mitzef could have had him last week for $12, and he just made that one slight mistake. And it's so big. It's just like you said, take the time, go look at it. And because you spent so much time, like you said, you were spending all this time to try to maximize this thing. And, you know, just like a one little slip up can really like, and that'll eat that. That's going to eat at him all season. If Bryce Miller is like, you know, I mean, it's going to eat at me too, because not the same league I added him in, that I dropped him in. It's a separate league. And I'm mad at myself, you know, because just like always chasing the next thing, not having patience in what I thought was going to happen eventually. So all those things, but
avoiding stupid shit is an underrated part of fantasy, right? Like it doesn't make you a better, like when shit happens, it doesn't make you a bad fantasy player because you fuck this kind of things up. It means you didn't sweat the small stuff. Like it's the stupid shit. It doesn't make you smarter, better baseball analyst or anything. It's just like, we all need to avoid that. Cause it is ultimately within your control, right? Like nobody else pressed the stupid wrong button or fucked it up. So you just need to force yourself to sweat those stupid shit. Cause there's enough hard things in this game that you're going to fuck up on your own. Like you're going to pick the wrong player. You're going to think that Jack Flaherty is going to have a good season, like really stupid things like that, that you don't want to also have to deal with dumb stuff. You'll find your own dumb stuff. Trust me. Try to avoid the other stuff.
Yep, absolutely. Dear diary. Something dumb I did this week was blah, 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 blah. And just, you know,
you feel like the dumbest person alive. We have all done it. If you play this game enough for enough seasons, you will do it. I have done it. You feel like an idiot. You feel like every other person in the NFBC is sitting at home laughing at you. It's like nobody is. It's shit happens. We all know shit happens. All you can do is hope it doesn't happen to you next week. So to the extent it just happened to you, anybody listening, fuck, like it sucks. But don't feel like everybody thinks you're an idiot. They do, but we're all idiots. Like nobody's laughing at anybody for that stupid shit like that.
Absolutely. All right. Fantastic episode here, gentlemen. We're going to keep this rolling on the Patreon side of things. But for the public side, this is going to end. If you want to hear the rest of this episode, you can hop on into the Pull Hitter Patreon. Sign up for $5 a month. You'll get the two extra launch angles per month, as well as, Rob said, 87 hours of content that I'll do a week. So everyone listening, thanks for tuning in to another Launch Angle podcast. For my co-host Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman, this is Rob DiPietro. You can find us at Twitter at Deadpool Hitter, at Rob Silver, and at Jeff W. Zimmerman. And you catch the Launch Angle podcast at Launch Angle Pod. And in the show notes, you'll have a link to our email if you want to give us any suggestions of the show. Much appreciated. And again, thank you for anyone who took the time out to give a rating and review, or to throw an email our way to just give us any input that we can or any feedback on the show. Really appreciate the dialogue and hope everyone continues listening to the show, and have a great rest of your week.